When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
You're tuned in to the Investing for Beginners podcast. Finally, step-by-step premium investment guidance for beginners. Led by Andrew Sather and Dave Ahern to decode industry jargon, silence crippling confusion, and help you overcome emotions by looking at the numbers. Your path to financial freedom starts now.
Welcome to the Investing for Beginners podcast. Today, Dave is sick under the weather, so it's just going to be me, but we have a guest today. His name is Kenny Robinson, and I'm really excited to have him on. Kenny's a full-time diversified investor. You might have heard about him from his YouTube channel called The Kenny Robinson Channel. And he's got a lot of cool things. I've checked out several of his videos. I'm really excited to get perspective, particularly around dividends and dividend ETFs. If you've been listening to the show at any length of time, you know how excited I get about dividends. And I think we can have a really fun conversation. So Kenny, thanks for coming on and joining us today.
Yeah, I'm very excited to be here on the podcast. And hopefully we can definitely talk about some excellent ETFs and dividends in general. So yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's start. You are a full-time diversified investor. So what does that mean to you? I know we talked a little bit off the air and you said you do some investing outside of dividend ETFs. So what does that mean as far as the whole circle of kind of what you do with your investments?
That's a great question. So the core of my portfolio, so to speak, my overall asset base, a lot of it is publicly traded, meaning, you know, in the public markets, the stock market and bond market, dividend ETFs. But as a true diversified investor, I also think it's important to have a portion of your net worth outside of the public markets in private placements, Regulation D type of private real estate investment trusts, as well as I also buy and sell physical real estate in person. So there's several different things that I do that bring me that type of passive income, different LLCs and businesses, but the lion's share is publicly traded. So I think it's important. It helps me sleep at night personally, right? Everyone's a little bit different. But I think if someone has a diversified pool of assets that's, you know, generating income for them, not only via the stock market, but also private placements and real estate, for example, that's a very, very good example where the whole key word with diversification is also uncorrelated, right? You don't want all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. So not only does that mean buying different stocks within the stock market, but also deriving some passive income from assets outside of the public market. So not only is asset allocation important, but I truly believe in asset location as well. So I would say in a nutshell, that's really what I refer to when I say diversified.
That topic, uncorrelated, that's something we haven't touched on yet. And that's really, really key. So for somebody who's an absolute beginner, can you explain what that means as far as finding assets that are uncorrelated and how that can help your diversification?
Excellent. Excellent question. So let's go at it from, step number one, baby steps with uncorrelated. So for example, when we talk about, all of us, you and I and all of our listeners who are either investors or, we're listening to this podcast to become investors. Well, when we talk about diversification and the old adage, you don't want all your eggs in one basket. Well, when you're placing your eggs in different baskets, when we use the term uncorrelated, for example, you might have a tech investment like Microsoft or Apple. Well, if that specific sector, right, that specific part of the economy takes a hit, right, a crash, or a good example is 2008, we had the financial crisis with the credit crunch with mortgages. So if all your investments are correlated to the real estate market or mortgages or banks, the entire value of your overall portfolio is subject to a lot more risk than really it should be. So when you have uncorrelated assets, meaning things that don't necessarily move in relation to real estate, for example, maybe a water utility, right? People need water, whether the economy is in the dumps or a bull market. So you want to make sure you spread out your investments and have investments that are uncorrelated, right? Utilities are an example to real estate or tech or healthcare, right? If you have all your investments in healthcare, you want to make sure that you pick something that's uncorrelated from healthcare, such as real estate. So that's really, it's a fancy word, but really it just means that you want to have your money spread out, not only diversified in different companies, but companies that don't necessarily have any business relation within that same sector.
So you mentioned real estate and the stock market. I think something that, because it's so recent, we had the 2008 financial crisis, like you said, and it happened to coincide with the real estate bubble popping. But
right.
Historically, I don't think, I'm no expert, but I don't think historically that real estate returns and stock market returns have necessarily been correlated. In fact, I think that can be, you mentioned some good examples with healthcare and utilities, but I think just in general, real estate can be a good exposure that's uncorrelated to the stock market just because, you could have an asset, you can have an asset bubble in the stock market and not necessarily have one in real estate. And so they can kind of counterbalance in a way. Does that sound somewhat correct?
Yeah, no. And I think you hit the nail on the head. And what newer investors have to realize is, for example, there's many different ways to invest in real estate. We can go through a few different ones. So
yeah, please.
You can buy a home and rent it out in your, in the same neighborhood or city that you live in, right? That's a physical investment that you're buying that you see every day and you manage. You can also invest into private REITs, and REIT is just an acronym for real estate investment trust. It's just a pool of real estate that's not traded on the market. So you can invest in that. And then you can also invest in real estate through the stock market, right? And so what's interesting when we talk about, different things being uncorrelated, and you're right, historically, real estate has generally been fairly stable and uncorrelated to market crashes. But with that being said, and so, an example of that is you own a rental home in your own city or community, and, whether the market crashes or not, you're probably still going to receive rental income, and the value of the home isn't going to necessarily drop with the stock market. So a rental home in your home city is uncorrelated from the stock market. But if you were to buy a real estate stock in the stock market and we had a major crash, even though that real estate company or the real estate that company owns isn't necessarily, in hot water or doing poorly, simply because that company is traded on the stock market. And if all the broad indices are and everything is crashing with that, the value of that real estate, specifically that traded instrument, the stock, the share of stock, is correlated by default because it is traded. And so when we talk about uncorrelated, basically what I'm saying is I'm glad you brought that up, because sometimes people say, well, I own real estate stock and that's uncorrelated from the general stock market. Well, it's not. Just because you own real estate, you want to make sure you own the right type of real estate that's uncorrelated from a market crash. Because in a big crash like 08, and some of our listeners may be younger and really haven't seen the charts on that, it really didn't matter what you owned. For the most part, everything went down. Even if it had great fundamental, balance sheets, basically, fundamental numbers, meaning even if it was a solid company, the share price still took a beating. So you have to be careful. Newer investors, when you want to make sure your assets are uncorrelated, just because it's real estate in the stock market doesn't mean that it won't go down.
Yeah, thank you for making that clarification. I think it's an important one. So while we're on the topic of real estate, I always play devil's advocate whenever it comes to kind of new ideas that we're presenting. So we want to hear the positives and the negatives to anything. So,
oh yeah.
As a beginner, somebody who maybe is interested, and whether that's private real estate that you manage in your own town, or it's a REIT, you mentioned REITs that aren't traded in the stock market. What are some of the things that new beginners would try not to fall into, the type of things that a lot of them get stuck with?
So I think a lot of newer investors, if they want to dip their toes into the real estate game, is they find one book or one teacher or one expert in the field, right? And they only learn from that one expert. So there's a million and one different real estate, very successful, very smart, very honest, and good real estate investors out there. But everyone has a little bit of a different method. And so what I always tell people, and really this applies to all types of investing, before you place your dollar in harm's way, right, risk, which that's a four-letter word, but it doesn't mean it's bad. But before you do that, I always say, you really need to go out and speak to several different people that are doing something that you're interested in doing, and say, hey, what are your mistakes? Kind of like what you're doing now. You're listening to this podcast thinking, okay, I'd like to invest in the stock market. I'm also interested in real estate. But the biggest thing is always, always undershoot your estimated returns, right? If you're buying a rental, you say, well, I could rent it out for this much. A lot of times people forget to take into account, well, the roof is 10 years old and, roofing usually lasts about 20, 25 years. So what do I need to put away each month now to be able to pay for a brand new roof in 15 years from now? Or what do I need to set aside for vacancies and all sorts of different things that come up, eviction costs, attorneys, and water lines that break that your insurance won't cover, right? So there's many different things. If you think it seems easy and glamorous, and a lot of people make it seem that way, there's a lot of work that goes into it. So I always say, before you put your dollar, your hard-earned dollar, in harm's way, you really have to perform, and you'll probably hear me say this a lot during the podcast, perform due diligence. Make sure it's a suitable investment for the amount of risk that you're taking on. So there's several different keys that we can get, dial right down into, but that would be the biggest thing. Make sure you do a wealth of research. I always say, don't just try one Kool-Aid, try them all, right? Don't listen to one guru, really listen to all different types of people. Find people in your local area, find local real estate investors. And most of the time, what you'll find is 99 out of 100 real estate investors, successful ones, will be happy to help and mentor, as long as they have the time. Every once in a while, you'll find someone that wants to be secretive or really doesn't want to help. But for the most part, there's a lot of smart, good, successful real estate investors out there that can really help give you some tips and pointers.
Yeah, those are excellent. Like you said, it applies to general investing as well. You want to gather as much information as you can. I was telling that to my mom actually today. She's talking about annuities and stuff, and I said, make sure you're getting as many different opinions on it as you can, and not just listening to one. I think that applies whether you're talking about insurance, real estate, stock market, bonds, passive income, all those sorts of things.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's funny you mentioned the A word, annuity, and I don't want to go off on a rant here, but it's very, very interesting. So annuities, I love this analogy for annuities. And for those listeners that aren't quite familiar with annuities, essentially annuity, there's many annuity companies out there, but basically, and again, there's different types of annuities, but very, very broad generalization of annuities is, say you have $100,000 and you want, regardless of what the stock market or the economy does, you want guaranteed income, or maybe you want some tax deferral. So you place $100,000 in this product, right? We'll call it a product, and that company, the annuity company, will guarantee you income for life, or, you know, there's many different bells and whistles. So they're good for a lot of people, but some people they're not good for. So what I like to say is, because there's a lot of hardline people out there saying annuities are the best thing since sliced bread. And then on the other side of the coin, people say, you know, stay away from annuities no matter what. Well, the truth of the matter is with annuities, and I know this is investing for beginners, so I'll be short with this annuity analogy, but annuities can be life-changing for the right. It's all about suitability for the right person. An annuity can truly be the best thing since sliced bread. So annuities are like a Swiss Army knife. They have this feature, they have that feature, they're handy for this, they're handy for that. But if you're not careful, you can cut yourself. So if you get the right annuity, and I just want to make this clear to everyone, if you get the right annuity for the right situation, there's nothing better than that. But depending on your other financial, depending on for someone else, annuity is not the right choice. So you hear a lot about annuities as a retirement term, and people say, oh, well, my neighbor did this and he loves that annuity. But my other neighbor on this side of me says he hates the annuity. Well, you know, there's many different factors. So just like Andrew just said, with anything, always do your research, especially with annuities, because there's a lot of confusion. But there is some killer annuities out there. So, yeah, it's funny you brought that up because I hear that a lot. So
I'm glad you mentioned the A word is annuities and not Andrew. Because that would have told.
There we go. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, yeah.
Budgeting was always a challenge for me. I struggled to find the best way to keep track of all of my money, not to mention all the time tracking down receipts, cataloging expenses, and trying to figure out what went wrong with my air quote system until Monarch Money. Monarch Money allowed me to easily see what is going on with my finances, helping me get a better handle on my spending, budgets, and more. It's my go-to app every day, more so than my bank, because I can quickly see where I am with my budgets and spending, allowing me to invest more and spend time on the things that I want to do. It's my GPS for money. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. Unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it so easy to set up, customize, and use. Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, family, or financial advisor. Invite them to your account at no extra cost, and they'll get their own login info and a joint view of all of your finances. Monarch is the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. In fact, Monarch Money is one of the first to bring you direct Apple Card, Apple Cash, and savings syncing with the latest iOS 17.4 update. Now you can sync your wallet directly for seamless budgeting. After trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's a top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/beginners. That's monarchmoney.com/beginners for your extended 30-day free trial. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I'd pay for vacations with whatever was in my wallet, but I was missing out on miles I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Welcome to the I Can't Sleep podcast with Benjamin Boster. If you're tired of sleepless nights, you'll love the I Can't Sleep podcast. I help quiet your mind by reading random articles from across the web to bore you to sleep with my soothing voice. Each episode provides enough interesting content to hold your attention, and then your mind lets you drift off. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's I Can't Sleep with Benjamin Boster.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
All right. So do you have an annuity, by the way?
I don't have an annuity. Annuities are generally, now there are some for, I don't want to call myself too young, but generally speaking, annuities, the types that we're talking about where you save up a nest egg and place it in an annuity, those are for people generally about 50 years of age plus, maybe 40 plus. But really a lot of things can be considered an annuity, like a 403b plan. If there's any educators or teachers listening to this, if you're a public school teacher, you probably have what's called a 403b account. It's kind of like a 401k except in the public space. So that's technically considered an annuity. But the annuities that we're referencing in general for tonight's episode is really the type of annuity when you reach the doorstep of retirement, right? Average age of 65. You take a slice of your liquid money, right, like a 25% of your 401k, and you roll that into an annuity, which is going to pay you income for life. So at this point, I don't, just because at this point, I'm still in the growth stage. But eventually, I will definitely be placing some of my assets inside an annuity, a good one. But there's a lot of good ones out there, and there's some bad ones out there. And if there's anyone listening to this that's at that age on the doorstep of retirement, and you have some annuities, don't jump into them thinking they're going to, you know, save you, but also don't be scared of them. There's some excellent ones out there. And what I suggest is meeting with several different licensed financial advisors or licensed insurance brokers that sell those, and just really meet with them and say, you know, is this suitable for me? Cause there's some excellent ones out there, but yeah.
Especially if it's tax, you know, like a tax shelter, tax preferences, or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's similar to IRAs and 401ks where you continue the tax deferral, which is really, or you can place, you know, just regular taxable money in there and it grows tax deferred. So, I'll get off my soapbox about it, but the biggest confusion with annuities is people say, oh man, the person that put me in this annuity told me it was a 5-star annuity. And I say, well, it depends on what your needs are, right? If you're a family man with 3 kids and, a Ferrari is a 5-star car, but it's an unsuitable car for your situation, right? It's a terrible car for your situation. So, of course, you hate it. So a lot of the confusion with annuities is the fact that people might – the annuity itself is awesome, right? But people just placed themselves or got placed into the wrong annuity for their needs. That's the biggest confusion. So it's excellent that you guys are doing research on that.
I like the analogy between the Ferrari and a guy who's got kids and like a
family. Yeah, you know, he would need like an SUV or, you know, right. Or, you know, if you're a hunter in Alaska where it snows all the time, yeah, Ferrari is a 5-star car, but it is the worst possible product for your needs, right? So that's the biggest miscommunication, I guess I would say, with annuities is you see these people and then I look at the annuity and I say, this is an excellent annuity. It's very efficient, low cost. Look at all these different guarantees. But yeah, of course you don't like it because you placed your entire liquid nest egg in it. So of course, yeah, if you lock all your money up, that's not good. So, you know, an annuity is great for a slice of your overall portfolio.
That's a good distinction.
Hey, you. What's the best way to get started in the market? Download Andrew's free ebook at stockmarketpdf.com. You won't regret it.
So you mentioned this, I didn't, but you know, feel free if it's too personal. You sound like a young, you know, pretty young guy. You're in the growth stage. I'm in the growth stage as far as investments, and you are full time already. So how did you get there, or what was like your general journey? Or we can just skip and go to the next topic if you'd like.
Yeah, you know, no problem. I always think, you know, when people are public about, you know, money and different investments and what they do. And if I present myself in the public space, I think it's important to be able to tell people exactly where I came from and how I did it and everything like that. So if anything, please cut me off because I don't want to ramble on. But yeah, you know, I would say I'm a little bit under middle aged, right? I'm closing in on the last year of my 20s. Which has been such a whirlwind, but yeah, I'm in a good spot
good thing,
right now.
Good thing Dave's not on, because he would get really upset that you said that middle-aged.
Middle-aged, yeah. So under middle-aged,
the last
under,
year
under
of your 20s.
Middle-aged, yeah. So keyword there. I'm not quite middle-aged, but no. You know what's interesting is I think the best time in, well, everyone has a different opinion, but the best time in life is yet to come. But for those of you that are listening that are younger than me, or even around my same age, or I guess it doesn't really matter. My story is, I grew up in a single parent household, and just so I start off like that, and people say, oh, here we go, rags to riches. It's not really like that. But where I am now is a culmination of things from early childhood that triggered events all the way up through, you know, my entire, decade of 20s. Interestingly, my father, my biological father, started a software company in the 80s, and for all intents and purposes, it was essentially what we can do today in 5 minutes. So it would have been obsolete in today's standards. But what it was a software company, or a piece of software that gave companies the ability to say, okay, Microsoft, I have all these pallets of DOS operating system hardware that I'd like to ship to this place and this place and this place. Well, my father's software would say, okay, you can fly it here. It'll get here on this day for this much. Here's all your different options. Here's the most expensive. Here's the cheapest. Here's, you know, so give them all different sorts of shipping options, which when I say that in today's world, people say, yeah, eBay does that. I can go to FedEx.com. I can, you know, but in the 80s, it was really unheard of unless you called up a freight broker. So that was very interesting. So in my early years, what I was born into was, you know, a lot of material items, a lot of different, you know, excess, so to speak. I think to anyone's standards, you know, full size pool, in the backyard, water, all sorts of stuff, you know, brand new home, anything we wanted. But what happened when I was, you know, I'd say six, maybe going on seven, is, you know, my parents got a divorce. And, by this time it's, early 90s, early to mid 90s. And, it was interesting. So, unfortunately my father really was focused on one thing, which was money. And so what's funny is I talk about investing in money and everything today in my daily life, and people think, you know, that I'm obsessed, but really, money is a very, very powerful tool, and it can be, you know, one of the best things in your life, but you have to be careful with how you approach it. And so what I learned basically from my father is what not to do. But he prioritized wealth and money over everything else, including his wife and his children. And so, my mother, interestingly enough, is the exact opposite, right? Money's important, but family and everything is obviously, you know, more important, which most all of us agree with. And so in my father's pursuit of taking over the world, he started to, you know, disregard laws, and, you know, his ethics were challenged in daily life, and he just wanted to make more and spend more. Everything was material, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, it's fun as a child, but what my mom started doing, because it was agreed that she would be the homemaker and he would bring home all the bacon, which he was good at. My mother is the exact opposite. She's not a massive risk taker. She's very by the book, ethics, morals, laws. And so, you know, she'd be doing laundry and she would just pull wads of cash out of my father's pockets, you know, that he just didn't account for it. Money was water to him through his fingers. So she would peel off, you know, $100, $200, $300 at a time out of his pockets and put it in a shoebox in the closet, thinking, well, gosh, he doesn't save. He just spends and makes. And, you know, basically what she was forecasting was, at some point in the future, the music's going to stop. This high-flying lifestyle, some of the stuff my father was getting into in business and law and taxes and just different things that he wasn't doing that wasn't kosher. So my mom, thank goodness, she was saving some of the money, which was family money, right? When the divorce went through, he was really adamant on not having to do anything essentially. So no child support. So long story short, I was raised by my mother for many, many years. And she went back to work. Luckily, she has several different skill sets. So she was able to keep a roof over her head. But I went from having everything in the world, probably too much, to basically saying, hey, we have this can of tuna. We're going to all split it. And my mother did as best she could. And, you know, we had to stay at home. Sometimes we get home, she couldn't afford a babysitter. So there's a lot of lack of parental supervision. But eventually, at age 14 and a half, I got my first official job, first W-2 earned income. And for those of you that have seen my YouTube channel, I actually did a video about that. But my first ever job was, I was 14 and a half. I got hired on at McDonald's. And that was at a point where, you know, the last 6-7 years, I was used to basically fending for myself, right? My mother would provide a roof over my head and food, but we really didn't do much else. And also during around that same period, I got that job. My mother remarried her college sweetheart, which, you know, was very opposite of my biological father, very hard, honest working man. So with that, in my early teen years with my job and my mother and my stepfather, I was really in an atmosphere of, hey, you go to work, you earn, you set some money aside, you know, you just keep charging forward and you'll achieve success. And so as I got to my senior year of high school, I always paid for all my clothes, my own vehicles and set a little bit of money aside. And in fact, my first investment was the TIAA CREF Equity Index Mutual Fund. I didn't know what it was at the time that I bought it, but that was one of my first ever stock market investments. And my parents made it clear to me my senior year of high school that if I wanted to continue to live under their roof, that's fine, but I either had to be going to college or I had to be developing a skill or working in some sort of industry or some sort of job that I could climb the ladder, right? They weren't going to allow me to graduate and then just go, you know, deliver pizzas and kind of hang out at their house. And so they made it clear that once you graduate, you're welcome to stay here, but you have to be doing something productive or whether it's college or learning a valuable skill. So as at 18, as most of us at that one point in time, we have the world figured out. And so, of course, I didn't listen to them and I joined the Marines. And I figured, well, if I want to go to school, I can have it paid for because, you know, they weren't really going to pay for my schooling. And by this point, you know, and I should say a little side detail, by that point, by the time I graduated, my parents could easily pay for my schooling and they actually, you know, both of them were disciplined savers, but it's more of a principal type of thing. They'll loan me money at an interest rate, not to make money, but purely just to make sure that I'm a capable individual entering adulthood. But so I joined the Marines and I traveled around the world. I figured, man, I wanted my cake and to eat it too. So I joined the Marine Reserves thinking, okay, well, I'll go play the Marine gig for a little bit, but I'll be home for the most part. And I can still, you know, chase women and go to college. And well, that was the time when a lot of Iraq and Afghanistan was heating up. So I wasn't really home a lot from age 19 till about 22. I was gone Afghanistan, Africa several times, Romania, Germany, Kurdistan, you name it. And so I learned a lot of, you know, I went through a lot in that stage of my life as far as like, you know, toughness, I guess, for an easy word. And I didn't have a lot of bills, so I saved a lot of money and I spent a lot of money as well, but about $4,000 to $5,000 made it into an S&P 500 index fund, which was nice. And one thing that I did immediately upon getting home and really finishing up my obligation in the military was I purchased my first home with a VA home loan, so nothing down, right? For those of you that are familiar, And that was, I believe I had just turned 22. So this is about, going on 8-9 years ago. And immediately at that age, I was ready. I was done with the military, ready to, live life, go to school, enjoy things and work and find a job. Well, all of my friends moved into my home with me and they were all paying me rent. And this wasn't I could say this was a strategy, but it was really just me wanting, all my friends to hang out, all in the same group and under the same roof. And, so all of them paid me rent. And so I started paying, double, triple my mortgage payment. And one day I did a calculation thinking, whoa, I'm basically paying my mortgage off at record pace because all the savings on interest. And, it's debatable whether or not that's, good or bad. And I actually have a video about that as well on my channel. But essentially, I was able to pay my home off within 6 years. So I just paid it off a few years ago. And, just simple 3-bedroom, 2-bath home. And it sounds a lot nicer than it is, but really this is in a not a high populated state, decent college town area. So I didn't pay a ton for the home. Some people are thinking, whoa, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, it wasn't several hundred thousand dollars. It was pretty modest. And that's the home I still have today. And so throughout my 20s, my first company was a detail company, automotive refinishing. I went out and got contracts all over the area I would get trade-ins from all the dealers, refurbish them, and then they would sell them. So I was making a lot of money doing that. I was really good at cleaning after the Marine Corps, attention to detail. And so I was successful with that. There's a few newspaper articles out there that you can find of me being interviewed about that. But what I learned from that is hard work is good, but it's not always the best paying. And so I was working 8 days a week, essentially at that company, backbreaking work. And I figured, well, if I can be successful at this, I know I can do other things that may be less labor intensive and I'll have a couple days off. So I started a factoring company. And for those of you that are unfamiliar with factoring, invoice factoring is, I would essentially provide cash flow services for small to medium sized businesses. So if you're a small business and you have a product, for example, and someone down the road orders, say, 5,000 units. Well, you probably don't have the cash to buy 5,000 units to sell those 5,000 units. So we would provide that. Or if you were a service company and you went and did a bunch of service, say landscaping, you did a $20,000 landscaping job for a company. Well, that company probably isn't going to pay that invoice for 30 to 45 days. So you could give my company a copy of that invoice and I'll give you 97 cents on the dollar. And then I'll collect that amount plus 3 or 4% 30 days. So I was making 3% on my money every 30 days, every month, essentially, which is insane returns if you compare that to the stock market. So I did that quite a bit. And then it was good money, but it wasn't really exciting. And I was going to business school at the time. So I'm thinking, well, I love business. I love investing. Why don't I apply at this financial firm in my hometown and see if I can get a job doing something there? So I got hired on with the understanding that I would do several of these business courses and get several licenses and everything to be able to, help service clients at that firm. And that's when I really took a deep dive into, and this was at about age 25. So going on 5 years ago, I really took a deep dive into market investing and real estate investing. And so I really got a wide variety of investment knowledge from that job. And then I was able to create a passive income portfolio of publicly traded instruments as well as real estate here in my hometown that right now at this point in time provides me with enough income to cover my basic expenses. Keep in mind, my home is paid off. My car is paid off. I don't live in a mansion. I don't drive a Bentley. I'm not uber rich, right? But I'm at a point where all my basic, and what I mean by basic is I have a roof over my head. My utilities are paid. My insurance is paid, my gas, my groceries, right? But if I want to do anything above that, of course, that's still where I need active income. So obviously I do that because I want to do more than sit in my home and have the water run. But that's basically in a nutshell, without going on for several hours, where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting you to, I was hoping you wouldn't, but I was expecting you to say something like, well, you know, I had this investment in this startup and now I'm a millionaire or whatever. So it was very refreshing actually to hear, you know, it's just, it's very relatable, you know, like just hard work, kind of prudence and kind of plugging away every day and being smart and saving. That's really cool.
I think there's luck is a little bit to do with it. You know, at an early age, again, I was lucky to have at least my mother in my life to say, hey, put some money away. She helped me purchase. I didn't even know what the equity index was when I bought it, but little things like that along the road. And then having a stepfather that I always didn't see eye to eye with, but at the end of the day, he's a good, honest man. And him and my mother are still together and they're actually retiring here shortly. So, I mean, just all around, I worked 7 days a week to be short about it. I worked 7 days a week throughout my 20s. I still work quite a bit. In fact, Andrew and I were just talking about this, but, 7 days a week, my 20s, I always had, in addition to the detail shop and the factoring company and my real estate investments, I've always had different side hustles that, and this is something, you know, for younger listeners, if you're in your teens or even 20s and you're wanting to get ahead, I see a lot of, and again, it's not an attack on, you know, people in general, but I see a lot of younger people having too much, I'll call it pride, to not want to work fast food or not want to work a job that might be embarrassing, like janitorial or whatever it may be. But, you know, the people that you think matter in your life, certain peers and things like that, unless they're paying your bills or they're helping you get to the next level, their opinion really shouldn't matter. And I know that's something that, you know, people at a certain age aren't really going to listen to, but to give you an idea, you know, I've worked night shifts as a janitor, as a side hustle. I have pictures of this too, because I knew one day that I wouldn't be doing this and I would want to share it. I have pictures of in front of big industrial laundry machines at a 2-star hotel that I worked the night shift, that I had to clean all these dirty sheets, anything to be able to set aside more money and get me to my end goal. So it wasn't a hookup from my parents. It wasn't, like Andrew just mentioned, a company I started that just shot to the moon. It wasn't a lucky stock pick. Really anyone in America, if you're listening to this in America, we're especially lucky that we have all the opportunity in the world. And some people take that for granted. So
preach on, man. I love it. So I did promise at the very beginning, and I know we're running out of time here, but I promised at the beginning that we're going to talk about dividends. So just, you know, briefly, how much of your income that's supporting your full-time investing lifestyle, how much of that is coming from dividends and how are you achieving it?
So about 70%, more than I'd like. I'd like to stay a little bit less correlated to the markets, but about 70% of my income now is coming from dividends. And it's a lot of it, I do own individual stocks and I like them, but a lot of it is through dividend ETFs. And that's an acronym for exchange traded funds. And for those that are completely new, all that means, and it's kind of in the name fund, all that means is it's a basket of dividend paying stocks. So you put a dollar into this basket, and it's spread out among anywhere from 50 to 2,000 different stocks. And it's a safety play. It's a diversification play too, you know, where, you know, if I place money in this dividend ETF, if one of those stocks goes down the toilet, meaning fails, I really don't, it doesn't change my lifestyle or my income that abruptly. So that's why I love dividend ETFs as well as individual stocks. They're fun, but a lot of my income is from ETFs in general, dividends.
Is it something that, I guess it's an obvious question, right? Something that a beginner can look into, and where, how would you recommend if they wanted to look into kind of getting into dividend ETFs, how would they go about it?
So many different brokerage platforms, for example, like TD Ameritrade, if people like doing everything themselves, TD Ameritrade has a good platform where they have commission-free ETFs. But the biggest thing is, I would say, when you're getting into dividend investing, and I wouldn't say I'm biased, because I hate to think that I'd be biased towards any investment. I should never get emotional about investments or money. But dividend investing has been proven time and time again, way before I was, you know, Andrew and I were around, that dividends create wealth over time. But diversified dividends are even better. And so the way you can get into that is take a look at, and if you're listening to this, write this down or replay it, but take a look at dividend aristocrats, right? Dividends that have increased their payouts a minimum of 25 consecutive years or more. Those are called the dividend aristocrats, and there's an ETF out there. NOBL is the ticker, Noble, and it tracks the Dividend Aristocrats index. But even with ETFs, you don't want to own just one. You want to make sure you diversify, and the companies within the ETFs are global and different market cap and different industries and sectors. But you can just start with one and then and build on from that. But the biggest thing is, even, you know, what Andrew and I tell you to do, always make sure you do additional research and make sure exactly, you know, you're taking full responsibility for your portfolio. I sometimes talk to newer investors and they say, well, just tell me what to buy or what should I do? And I can tell you all day long, but you need to make sure it's the right investment for you personally and your risk tolerance and your goals and your time horizon.
Yeah. Teach a man to fish versus giving them a fish. So you mentioned education, and that's perfect, right? We've talked previously on the podcast about Dividend Aristocrats. You can go to episode 49 for that. We had Nick McCollum on from SureDividend.com. I know you've got a ton of videos as well on your channel. So tell us where we can check you out, and, you know, tell us about a couple of videos you have related to if somebody wants to educate themselves on, you know, dividend ETFs or any other aspects of our conversation today. Give us like a snapshot of a title of a video you did and a little summary.
Yeah. So if you're on YouTube and you just type in Kenny Robinson, you'll see my channel. And I have mostly dividend videos on there, different dividend ETFs. For example, you know, retiring on REITs or living on dividend stocks safely. That's a key word. So I can point out a few individual ones, but if you go to my video section, there's a smorgasbord of dividend videos. And then another one that people seem to like, that I get emailed about is, you know, saving $50 per month changed my life. And that's a good one for beginning investors to watch as well.
Excellent. So yeah, definitely check that out. It's the Kenny Robinson channel. Kenny, thanks for coming on. I really like, so how I stumbled on basically what you're doing is I was in a Facebook group with you and I saw, who's this Kenny guy? And he was just asking these questions. He was like, hey, everybody, I'm about to make a video for beginners. What would you like to hear and what questions would you like answered? So I really resonate with that. I love this idea of answering people's questions because, you know, every expert who talks about the stock market or investing, they don't remember what it's like to be an investor because they're so far past that. I'm definitely guilty of that too. So I think it's so key to be able to ask people where they're at, what are you struggling with, and help them out. So I know you made a video based on that. I think you called it just Investing for Beginners. So I think that's a good resource too.
Investing for Beginners Part 1. And keep in mind, it's literally what that is Investing for Beginners. So if someone is listening to this by chance that has never purchased a stock or might not even be 100% sure on what a stock is, that video is for you. If you've been investing for a few years, it might be redundant, but Investing for Beginners Part 1 on my channel is for someone that is a completely new to investing. We start from the very, very basic. And so it's a series that I'll be continually progressing with and uploading.
Cool, man. Kenny, thanks again.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for us tonight. If you enjoyed our show, you know, you could check out the show notes all on investingforbeginners.com. I'll have links set up. I'll have Dave set up some links to some of the videos that Kenny talked about today. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. If you're enjoying the podcast, be sure to leave a review. I would appreciate that. I love to see positive reviews or just feedback in general. You can also email me. So that all being said, have a good week. Invest with a margin of safety, emphasis on the safety, and we'll talk to you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this content. 7 Steps to Understanding the Stock Market shows you precisely how to break down the numbers in an engaging and readable way with real-life examples. Get access today at stockmarketpdf.com. Until next time, have a prosperous day.
The information contained is for general information and educational purposes only. It is not intended for a substitute for legal, commercial, and/or financial advice from a licensed professional. Review our full disclaimer at einvestingforbeginners.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.